It's a sad book for those of you who weren't in the first service. We're already in chapter 3. And the book revolves around the historical background of Jerusalem being decimated by the Babylonians. And it's been burned down, and it's basically now going through this extreme famine because there's been a deporting of all the population of Israel, of Jerusalem. But not everybody was taken. Really, the poor people were left to kind of stay in Jerusalem. So you still had a lot of the poverty that were there, poor people. And already they were poor, but now they're in such dire places that we found that they were eating their own offspring. So women were actually eating their kids and stuff like that. Cannibalism set in, and that's how bad it got. And Jeremiah is a prophet, and he's actually crying about this and weeping about their destruction and how God has given them over to their enemies because of their rebellion of him. But yeah, chapter 3 was kind of cool. We kind of ended last service with some good, wonderful, positive passages in chapter 3. One of them was verse 22, "Though the Lord's mercies we are not consumed because his compassions fail not, they are new every morning. Great is God's faithfulness." So there's always that hint of hope in Jeremiah's writing that God is not going to cast off Israel forever, nor Jerusalem. Jerusalem also, it's good for you guys to know that it's called God's footstool in this book, meaning God has his foot planted in Jerusalem, so he's not done with Jerusalem, but he is just casting off his people from the land because of their sin. But he will put them back into the land at some point. So that's kind of the idea there. How it applies to us as Christians, obviously, is that we too need to be brought to a place where we are needing Christ. And that means we have to be brought to a place where we are, in a sense, dead to our old life, and now we're ready to live for Christ. And so sometimes God will let us go our own direction, and he'll let us kind of train wreck in life until we finally get back on our knees and say, "Okay, God, you know, I'm ready." And then God is right there to receive us. And so we saw this admonishment, which just means like an encouragement, a warning in verse 40, to turn back to the Lord. And that's what Jeremiah is praying too, is that we need to turn back to God. And then in verse 43, we'll start there. It says, "You have covered yourself with anger." And he's talking about God. God has covered himself with anger and pursued us. He has slain and not pitied. Another thing to understand too about God is, like, a lot of times we say the characteristics of God is like love. Like, you know, and I'm like that too, where I go, you know, God is love. And that's true. 1 John chapter 4, and we read those passages, you know, "Behold what manner of love the Father has given to us." You know, God is love. He who loves has come from God, this whole idea. But also God's a judge, and God's also not only has love, but if you have love, you also have the antithesis for love. You know, meaning what I mean by that is if you have love, the ability to love, then what's the opposite of love? Okay, so you also have the ability to hate. And see, within God, there's a righteous love and there's a righteous hate. You know, and in a parent, that's how I should be too, right? Just think if I did not hate certain things. What would happen to my kids if I didn't hate certain things? I'd be like, sure, go watch that. Sure, go out on the road. Hey, Dad, I want to go to the park. Sure, go ahead. You know, we're going to go to the mall. Sure, go right ahead, right? Just whatever, you know. If I didn't have a righteous hate, meaning there's certain things I hate. What do I hate? I hate the idea that my wife, my daughter, who's 13 years old, can be sex trafficked, and that happens at malls. See, I hate that idea that someone could come to her and lie to her at 13 and say, "Hey, you're pretty. You know, have you ever thought about maybe modeling? You know, something like that." And she goes, "You know, I never thought about that. That's kind of..." They go, "Yeah, just come with me, and you know, I have this little thing right here, and we can go sit down and talk." And she goes, "Oh yeah, cool." And then next thing you know, she's in a car going to New York. so she could be someone's little sex puppet. You know? Now, I say that story because that's a real story of the girl from Yuma, you know, where she ended up at 18 years of age, if you can believe it, 18 years of age, high school, graduated high school, went to the mall. Someone asked her if she ever modeled. She said, no, I never did. They took her. She ended up in New York, woke up in New York, became a sex prostitute for a year, and then went into porn and did porn movies for another 2 years. Yeah, isn't that crazy? Didn't see her parents for 3 years. Crazy sad, right? So as a parent, you got to hate certain things, right? As a parent, you got to hate the dudes that would do that. The women and the men that set up that kind of organization to get my 13-year-old. If I don't hate that, I'm going to let my 13-year-old, I'm going to lead her into danger. So God has that characteristic where God loves perfectly, but he also hates perfectly, you know? And so he's like that with everything. God is, he judges righteously. He knows how to judge in just the right way. So when you read these ideas of him covering himself with anger, don't think of it as an unrighteous anger, but think of it as a perfect anger, the right kind of anger that needs to happen. And it says, and he pursued us. You have slain and not pitied. You have covered yourself with a cloud that prayer should not pass through. You have made us an offscouring and refuse in the midst of the peoples. All of our enemies have opened their mouths against us. Fear and a snare have come upon us, desolation and destruction. Verse 48. My eyes overflow with rivers of water for the destruction of the daughter of my people. Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet, and here you see why. He's always crying. It says, my eyes flow and do not cease without interruption till the Lord from heaven looks down and sees. My eyes bring suffering to my soul because all my daughters in my city. My enemies without cause hunted me down like a bird. They silenced my life in the pit and threw stones at me. The waters flowed over my head and I said, I am cut off. You know what I like about the ideas of 48 and 49? Of his eyes flowing like rivers and they don't cease. And then it says in 50 and 51, it's because he sees the daughters of his city. He sees all the women of his city just being destroyed. Is I like the idea that he has compassion. You know, sometimes I wonder, like, if we as a group of people, like, have compassion on other people, or if we become so indifferent to people's suffering. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, sometimes I wonder, like, we're so inundated with news all the time, right? Like, sometimes it doesn't affect me like it should. Like, if I didn't have the news, say there was no TV, none, right? And someone came up to me and they said, dude, did you know someone, you know, cut off someone's head in Oklahoma? I would be like, what? Yeah, dude, someone cut off a school worker's head. That truly happened, by the way, right? Just this last month. Yeah, some dude who was into Islam and got into this whole Islam thing went nuts on this coworker. Now, if I didn't have any TV and I didn't have zombie movies and I didn't have any of those things, you know, going on that I've had so many of those in my head, I would be like, oh my heaven, that would be huge. You know what I mean? That would be huge. My heart would be crushed. I'd be like, oh my gosh, like who's doing that? Like, I mean, God, I can't even imagine. It would be... But now someone says it, right? Someone got their head cut off and you go, oh, okay. Yeah, well, I watched The Walking Dead. And like that happens all the time. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes we think that way, I think, now, where we just don't really, we don't think of it as normal, you know, or we don't think of it as real, you know, anymore. You know, does that make some sense? But to Jeremiah, it was really sad to see people go through sad things. He really cried. He was really sad about it, you know. So it says in verse 55, I called on your name, O Lord, from the lowest pit. You have heard my voice. Do not hide your ear. Isn't that cool? From the lowest pit, you can call on God. And I love that. If you ever want a side passage, Psalm 50:15 is beautiful if you want one to put next to 55. It just says, you know, I cried out to you and you heard my cry and you came and rescued us. It's beautiful. But and then it says, you have heard my voice. Do not hide your ear from my sighing, from my cry or help. You drew near on the day I called on you. and said, "Do not fear. O Lord, you have pleaded the case for my soul. You have redeemed my life. O Lord, you have seen how I am wrong. Judge my case. You have seen all their vengeance, all their schemes against me." Meaning the enemies of Israel, you have seen how they have treated us. You've seen how they act. Verse 61. "You have heard how they have insulted, O Lord, all their schemes against me." You know, schemes reminds me of Ephesians chapter 6. It says the schemes of the devil. Jeremiah sees the enemies as having schemes against God's people, Israel. And in Ephesians 6, in the New Testament, Paul sees that the enemy is the devil that has a scheme against us. Ephesians chapter 6, look it up. The word scheme comes from the idea of schematic. Do you guys know what a schematic is? Blueprints. Satan has a blueprint on you. That's what Ephesians 6 says. He knows everything about Bo, man. In and out. You know, he knows how to tune me to FM and to AM. You know what I mean? He knows every little part. He knows what's going to get me. He knows exactly what's going to get me. And this is the idea of Jeremiah, is that the enemy's had a schematic of us. They know. And so, Lord, you pay them back. You know, Satan will be paid back as well. We get that in the book of Revelation. Praise God. And then it says, verse 62, "Their lips of my enemies and their whisperings against me all the day. Look at their sitting down and their rising up. I am their taunting song. Repay them, O Lord, according to the works of their hand. Give them a veiled heart. Your curse be upon them. In your anger, pursue and destroy them from under the heavens of the Lord." So pretty radical prayer, huh? That's a prayer, man. That's a pretty cool prayer. You know, God get them. God get them, man. Get those guys. Now let's get into chapter 4. This is 22 verses. Remember, chapter 3 was the long chapter of Lamentations. It was actually 22 three times. And the rest of the chapters are all 22 verses. That's how the verses break down. "How the gold has become dim, how changed the fine gold, the stones of the sanctuary are poured out at the head of every street. The precious sons of Zion, valuable as fine gold, how they are regarded as clay pots, the work of the hands of the potter. Even the jackals present their breast to nurse their young." It's kind of weird, huh? Even the jackals, you know, have milk in their breast for their kids. "But the daughter of my people is cruel, like ostriches in the wilderness." Now, I've never hung out with an ostrich, but I'd hate to get one ticked off. Right, I don't want to ride one. "The tongue of the infant clings to the roof of its mouth for thirst. The young children ask for bread, but no one breaks it for them. Those who ate delicacies are desolate in the streets. Those who were brought up in scarlet embrace ash heaps. The punishment of the iniquity of the daughter of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment with no hand to help." So it's kind of interesting. It says that even the rich people in Lamentations are destroyed. Now, the rich people were really taken captive. They were taken. Daniel was part of that. The writer, you know, Daniel, you have the book of the Bible, Daniel. He was taken captive. He was more of the wealthy kind of person. So people that were once, you know, in these palaces or in great places in Jerusalem were no longer in them. And he saw that. He saw babies starving. And then he says in verse 6 something really interesting, don't you think? "The punishment of the iniquity of the daughters of my people is greater than the punishment of the sin of Sodom, which was overthrown in a moment." Pretty radical, huh? What he's getting at is this. It's not that he's saying the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was better than your sin. You know, your sin's worse than that of Sodom and Gomorrah. But he's saying the punishment of the sin of you guys is greater. Meaning, at least Sodom, I think what he's getting at is Sodom and Gomorrah, at least, how is that wiped out? How is God's judgment on Sodom and Gomorrah in the book of Genesis? It was quick, huh? Remember, it was a quick judgment. Haven't you ever said, man, if I die, I just hope it's really quick? Haven't you ever said that or thought that? Like, wouldn't it be nice just to die quick? You know, like, give me a pill. You know, I'll take the red one. Thank you. You know, and you pop the red one and bink, you're dead. You know what I mean? I mean, that's kind of a cool way. And I understand there's that controversy right now, right on the news, where there's a lady who is now, you know, she wants to die. She has terminal brain cancer. And she wants to take, they want to euthanize her, you know, or there's a place that's going to euthanize her, and she's wanting it and everything like that. And so that's the controversy, is can the state, say Arizona, allow you to make a decision to end your life? Does the state have a right to say to you, Samantha, you want to end your life? We'll help you do it, man. You know, give us $20. We'll put an injection of something in you, and bang, you're done. Now, you know, that's kind of the idea, you know. I mean, and that's, you know, obviously sometimes we go, hey, if you have terminal illness, that might not be such a bad idea, you know what I mean? It's like you get a shot and you're dead. That's, you know, obviously there's limits to that, right? Because someone might just want to die. Someone might, you know, have just got a divorce. You know, someone's wife might have just died, and they go, you know what, I don't want to live anymore. I don't want to live anymore. I'm sad. I don't want to live like this. And they go to the doctor and they just go, hey, you know, doc, give me a shot and die. You know, I mean, that would be kind of weird, don't you think so? Because then people start being like, well, I don't feel good either, man. My life sucks, dude. Just kill me too. You know what I mean? So there's got to be some kind of limit on it, you know, for sure. And that's the political stuff that's being talked about. But the idea Jeremiah is saying is pretty applicable to all of us, right? I mean, if you could, you know, God, Sodom and Gomorrah just were judged real quick. It was like, wham! You know, they're dead, you know. But we, what kind of death is Jerusalem going through? Slow. Painful. They went through actually 3 times where Babylon came in and took people captive. 3 different times in the city. The city was besieged for over a year, meaning basically food wasn't allowed to get into that city from the enemy. People were being starved to death for that long. The city then was burned down. I mean, this has been a long burning judgment, man. For, you know, this judgment has been happening over a long period of time. And have you ever seen someone die of like cancer and they've gone into a long period of, that's no fun, right? It's like, I can see why morphine is like, you know, the happy pill in a hospital, you know, because I would want it too. It's just like, just inject me, man, with morphine and let me just kind of not feel, you know, because, you know, when cancer can get throughout your body, it can be quite painful and all your organs are failing, but not enough to kill you. So it's like you're still just on a slow burn death. It's crazy, you know. So Jeremiah says, dude, to go quick is a lot better than to have this long thing, you know, this long death. That's what he's getting at. And then he says, her Nazarites or guys that were pure, the righteous, the upper crusts were brighter. You know, the Beverly Hills, you know, were brighter than snow. They were whiter than milk. They were more ruddy in body than rubies. They're like sapphires in their appearance. They were awesome looking. Now their appearance is blacker than soot. They go unrecognized in the streets. Their skin clings to their bones. It has become as dry as wood. So that's what happened to Beverly Hills. It has become poor. Those slain by the sword are better off than those who die of hunger. Is that true? Yeah, wouldn't you say that's true? Wouldn't you rather just get stabbed in the heart, just have a quick 10 seconds of ouch, than the slow burn of starvation? No way, I wouldn't want to do that. For these pine away, stricken for lack of the fruits of the field, the hands of the compassionate women have cooked their own children. They become food for them in their destruction of their daughter of my people. So sad. That's in fulfillment of Deuteronomy 28:57. God told them this was going to happen if they rejected, and they did. So they are facing the consequences. And Deuteronomy 28 was written probably close to 1,000 years before this time. So that's, it's taken, God, they rebelled from God for 1,000 years, but it's now that God's judging them. Is God patient in his judgment or what? Deuteronomy is the 5th book of the Bible. It was written by the hand of Moses. And he said in Deuteronomy 28 that that would be their punishment, that they would be taken out of the land, and that even they would eat their own kids. That's how bad it would get. And even though they rebelled that whole 1,000 years, Israel stayed in rebellion. They had some good moments, but mostly bad moments. God waited 1,000 years, and now they're going through judgment. It says in verse 11, the Lord has fulfilled his fury. So it is a prophetic work that's going on right there. God is fulfilling his fury. He has poured out his fierce anger and kindled a fire in Zion. Hey, kindle. I wonder if that's where they get kindle. And it has devoured its foundations. The kings of the earth and the inhabitants of the world, verse 12, would not have believed that the adversary and the enemy could enter the gates of Jerusalem. Because of the sins of her prophets and the iniquities of her priest, who shed in her midst the blood of the just, they have wandered blind in the streets. They have defiled themselves with blood so that no one would touch their garments. So he's blown away in verse 12 that everybody could enter into Jerusalem. You've got to understand, Jerusalem is called the city of David. Even to this day, it's called the city of David. Zion, the signpost of God, the place of God. And when David was a king, there was no way anybody was going to take Jerusalem. When Solomon was a king, there was no way anybody was going to take Jerusalem. You know, it was a place that was a stable place. And even with all, we went through the book of Kings, 1st and 2nd Kings, even with all their bad, horrible kings, no one ever was thinking that Jerusalem would ever be taken. That was the place where the temple stood. It was the place where all the high-ups lived and the government was, and that it wouldn't be overthrown. So he's blown away that it's happened. And he says it's because of the leadership. Isn't that sad? It's because the leadership took a dive. The prophets went south. The priest went south. Instead of living for righteousness and helping people out, they lived for themselves. They became rich off of religion. Does that sound like something today? Rich off religion? Yeah. Are we really preaching God's word? Our church is really this morning taking the time to go through Bible studies? Or are they would rather just give you guys messages on stuff? You know what I mean? Right? Getting rich off religion instead of actually teaching the Bible. You know, so that's what they're getting judged for. Verse 15, they cried out to them, go away, unclean. So it got so bad where it says people were crying out to the people of Israel, unclean. Go away, unclean, go away, do not touch us. When they fled and wandered, those among the nations said they shall no longer dwell there. Unclean was a person like who had leprosy or someone who was disease-ridden. Now that's how Israel's looked at, as a disease-ridden person. A person with leprosy, a person with disease, that's how Jerusalem is looked at now. A diseased-ridden person. You know, so that's the analogy. Verse 16, the face of the Lord scattered them. He no longer regards them. The people do not respect the priests, nor show favor to the elders. Still our eyes failed us, watching vainly for our help. In our watching, we watched for a nation that cannot save us. So they tracked our steps so that we could not walk in our streets. Our end was near, our days were over, for our end had come. Our pursuers were swifter than the eagles of the heavens. They pursued us on the mountains and lay in wait for us in the wilderness. Sounds like something from J.R. Tolkien's like Lord of the Rings, huh? It's like the end has come. The end is near. Verse 20. The breath of the nostrils of the anointed of the Lord was caught in their pits. Of whom we said, under his shadow we shall live among the nations. Rejoice and be glad, O daughter of Edom. You who dwell in the land of Uz, the cup shall also pass over you, and you shall become drunk and make yourself naked. The punishment of your iniquity is accomplished, O daughter of Zion. He will no longer send you into captivity. He will punish your iniquity, O daughter of Edom. He will uncover your sins. It's kind of interesting, the idea of being drunk and the idea of being naked go hand in hand in the Bible. They always talk about it in the same way. You're being judged. You guys are like drunk people. You know, you drink and you end up taking off your clothes, right? Yeah, it's kind of weird. And that's kind of how it works, right? You drink, you get drunk, and we play things like strip poker and things like that, right? And pretty soon we're in these weird situations, you know, vulnerable. When you think of nakedness, you have to think of vulnerability. You know, when you're naked, you're vulnerable, right? It's kind of scary. Yeah, I mean, and what? Yeah, I mean, even for a guy, dude, if you're walking around buck naked in the road, right? I mean, just in the streets and just hanging out, I mean, there's a lot of vulnerability, right? Yeah, someone could drive by, a rocket hit, bam, ouch. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of things that could go wrong, right? Sensitive areas, right? Not good, you know? So could you imagine? I mean, man, I don't know if I'd really dig that so much. You know what I mean? It'd be kind of weird. Even though, you know, it's really funny. I was just talking to Chris in the first service. And in Oregon, Oregon's a really liberal place, Portland, Oregon. And when I was there, we were hanging out at like 2 and eating pizza at 2 in the morning. And they have naked people there that just ride bicycles. And they're just buck. I'm not even joking with you. And I'm like, my friend's from there, and I'm like, there's a naked dude right there. And he goes, oh yeah, there's like, it's okay, you can be publicly nude in Oregon, in Portland, in the city of Portland. I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah, you can be publicly nude. He goes, people just publicly are nude here. And I'm like, okay. Cause I was just tripping, dude, cause I saw a couple of people ride by, and I looked, and I was like, wow, dude. Like, I thought maybe they had some skivvies on or something, but I saw all legs and I saw all body. You know what I mean? I didn't see nothing, no clothes at all, but I figured in my brain, I thought, oh, they probably have, you know, some Speedos on, dude. I mean, I know it's a liberal place. Maybe it's just some Speedo dudes are out there cruising. But he's like, no, they're, then I looked, I'm like, no, there ain't no Speedos on that, dude. Buck naked. You know, I know, dude. I'm like, that's a little weird, man. What if you fall, dude? Again, it's like, you're vulnerable, aren't you, bro? I mean, that's a crazy road rash there. Yeah, so I'm not into that, dude. I'm just saying, wow, it's crazy. Sorry to bring that up. Crazy. Okay, so let's go to chapter 5, the last chapter. Remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Look and behold our approach. So he asked God to look upon them. Our inheritance has been turned over to aliens. What was supposed to be the inheritance of Israel? I mean, think of what were some of the blessings that were supposed to be for Israel? Yeah, like what was told to Abraham, like things of old. You know, what was told to those patriarchs, that's what we call them, fathers of Israel. Remember, it says they would be a blessing to people, right? That people would go to them to be blessed. And it was through Israel that the whole world would actually be blessed. And people would actually come to Israel and be so happy for them because they have in turn blessed the world. You know, even Jesus said to a non-Jewish woman, he said to her, salvation comes from who? The Jews, right? Even Jesus said to the girl, salvation is from the Jewish people. They, man, it's through the Jewish people that a blessing has come to the whole world. Is that true? Yeah. But at this time, did it seem like that was going to happen? Like the Messiah was going to come, that blessing was going to come to the whole world through the Jewish line, to the Jewish people? No, from Jeremiah's point of view, they were being decimated. It's like, is God really going to bless everybody? Through us? How's that going to happen? We're being taken captive. You know? How is the Messiah, the anointed one of God, ever going to come and bless anybody when we don't even have a homeland anymore? We're not even living here. So, pretty sad. It says in verse 2, our inheritance has been turned over to aliens, to foreigners. And our house to the foreigners, we have become orphans and waifs. I'm not sure what that word means, actually. Our mothers are like widows. We pay for the water we drink. I wrote like us. Isn't that funny? Yeah. He saw it as a bad thing, paying for the water we drink. Now today, it's normal, right, for us? We pay for water today. You know, it's weird. 20 years ago, that was not how the world worked, right? Just 20 years ago, if you paid for water, I remember, you know, you'd be like, what? Pay for water? It's coming out of your faucet. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, it's just in the last 20 years that bottled water has become what it is today. And, you know, that's a multi-million dollar industry. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, paying for bottled water. So he says, we pay for the water we drink, and our wood comes at a price. They can't even chop down a tree. They pursue at our heels the enemies. We labor and have no rest. We have given our hand to the Egyptians and the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread. All the blessings that were supposed to be on us are now with our enemies, he says. Our fathers sinned and are no more. We bear their iniquity. And isn't that true? Have you ever heard of that passage? I'll read it to you. It's found in the book of Exodus, chapter 34, verse 7. But I'll read it to you. You guys have probably heard this before. It's kind of one of those spooky passages. It says, God is merciful, gracious, long-suffering, abounding in goodness and truth. That's not the spooky section. But this is. Keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving the sins and transgressions are... And by no means clearing the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and the children's children to the third and fourth generation. That's the spooky part, right? It's the idea that God visits, right? The grandchildren and the great-grandchildren. In the same way that he visited the father who sinned, he visits the great-grandchildren of the... And this passage kind of bears the same thing. Oh, did you catch that? It says, talked about, for we pay for water we drink, and wood comes at a price. They pursued our heels, we have labored and have no rest. We have given our hand to the Egyptians, but our fathers sinned and are no more, but we bear their iniquity. Did you know I bared the iniquity of my father? My father was an alcoholic. He drank. And I bore that iniquity, meaning his sin affected me. It was passed on. You know, that happens, that a son will bear the iniquity of a father, or a daughter will bear the iniquity of her parents. You know, the bad deeds that our parents do, it can fall onto our lap. It doesn't mean I have to live in that, right? Thank God. I mean, I have a choice to go a direction I want, but you know what? Let's face it. Some of us are born a different deck of cards. There's no doubt about it. I mean, some of us are born into situations, right? I mean, do you fault a 12-year-old girl in the Philippines who's a prostitute? Do you think it's her fault that she's a prostitute? She's been raised to be a prostitute since she was a kid. That's what they do. Hope, if you lived over there and you were 13 years old and you lived with their parents, you would be a prostitute too. That's what they do. They are poor. It's the only way they make money is when they have daughters, is to prostitute them. And the girls have no problem with it. When you go over there, and Katie has great stories of when she went over there on the mission trip, you know, you get with those 13-year-old girls and talk to her about what they're doing, and they don't think nothing's wrong with it. Nothing's wrong with it at all. Like, are you saying something's wrong with what I'm doing? No, I'm making money for my family. I'm helping my family eat. You know, my family thanks me for this. That's how they're raised. You know, so do you think, I mean, they bear some of that iniquity. Don't you think they're bear, you know, that it's on them, right? I mean, meaning their parents passed that along to them. And now they live in that too. And it takes a whole heck of a lot to get a girl out of that kind of lifestyle. But you can't just say to a girl who's 13 years old in the Philippines, oh, don't be a prostitute. Because you know what you're telling her? Don't take care of your family. So if you go to someone and say, hey, don't be a prostitute, but you don't help out their family, are you doing anything? No, you have to help out the economics of the situation, don't you? Yeah, so they don't go into that. So it's like sometimes we do bear the iniquities of our parents. There's no doubt about it. Doesn't mean we have to live that way, But it certainly means that we do, sometimes we just get born in a situation. Verse 8, servants rule over us. There is none to deliver us from their hand. We get our bread at the risk of our lives because of the sword and the wilderness. Our skin is hot as an oven because of the fever and of famine. So sad again. They have ravished the women in Zion, the maidens in the cities of Judah. Princes were hung up by their hands. The elders were not respected. Young men ground at the millstones. Boys staggered under loads of wood. The elders have ceased gathering at the gate and their young men from their music. Isn't that sad? Women being raped. Men being killed. Hung up by their hands. Being used as slaves. Verse 14, the elders have ceased gathering at the gate. The gate was a place of fun. Instead, it became a horrible place. And the young men from their music, no more tunes. The joy of our heart has ceased. Our dance has turned into mourning. Doesn't that sound a lot like the book of James? What does James say in James? I think it's chapter 4, maybe? Chapter 3? I'll find the quote for you guys. James chapter 4, verse 9. That's where we see in the New Testament, James 4, 9, where James actually says, lament. He actually says, you guys need to start lamenting, like the book of Lamentations. He says, change your joy to sorrow. And then he says, draw close to God and he will draw close to you, right? Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he shall lift you up. James, in the book of James in the New Testament, the half-brother of Jesus, James, is kind of has this idea of lamentations you can tell on his mind. The idea of that our heart has ceased to be joyful. It has now turned to gloom. Because God's heavy hand is upon us. And James is urging the people in his day, in the New Testament, to be real with God and to seek true repentance from God. And that means changing your joy to mourning. And I don't know if you guys can relate to that, but there are certain times where there's no need for laughter. And sometimes laughter is a shield for really a hurt heart. You know, have you ever hung out with someone who just always is joking or sarcastic or always like that? A lot of times, like in high school, a lot of times guys are like that. They're very sarcastic and funny and da-da-da-da-da. But really what it is their hearts are just so stinking hurt. They're so fragile from what's happened in their life and how they're living that they don't know how to cope with that kind of emotion. So what they do is they put on a front of laughter and joy and funness. And things like that. In the book of James, that's what he's saying, is turn your laughter, you know, to lamenting. Meaning, you know, in your life, there needs to come a time where you become serious with life. And serious with sin. And serious with where you're at in your walk with God. Where it's no longer just a trivial thing, you know. But there is seriousness. And I remember as a senior, man, when I started, towards the end of my year, my senior year, I started getting really serious in life. And that's when things started getting, I had that look like you have right now, Aaron, that kind of look of pondering and thinking. And, you know, and my friends kind of saw that though in me. They kind of saw that look of like, you know, something's different about Bo, you know, something's going on in his life. Now they didn't want to know much about it, but they saw when they went over my house, they saw all these Bible passages on my wall. They saw that I was going through some kind of change. That, man, things that were fun no longer were fun for Bo. And he was starting to contemplate life and why he does what he's doing. And what's going to happen? What's it going to lead him to? And this is how I was talking. And they were like, whoa, dude, that's a little different from where you've been. You know what I mean? And see, my laughter was changed to lamenting. There became a reality that finally hit my life. And there needs to be that in your life. There needs to be a seriousness. Nothing's wrong with not having fun or, you know, having fun and laughing. And those are beautiful parts of our character. But certainly it can't be without the idea of a real seriousness of lamenting and thinking through things. So that's what he's talking about in James. It's a great cross-reference, though. The crown has fallen from our head, verse 16. Woe to us, for we have sinned, because our heart is faint, because of the things our eyes grow dim. Because of Mount Zion, which is desolate, with foxes walking about on it. Then in verse 19 it ends. You, O Lord, remain forever. Isn't that cool? God is stable. Though everything goes to pot, right? God, you are stable. That's kind of the idea. You're thrown from generation to generation. Why do you forget us forever and forsake us for so long a time? Turn us back to you, O Lord, and we will be restored. Renew our days as of old, unless you have utterly rejected us and are very angry with us. Isn't that an amazing ending? So filled with sadness, right? And unsure, and really the uncertainty, right, of really where they're at with God. You kind of get that idea, huh, at the end of the lament. It's that there's not a real certain thing. I love the idea of verse 21, though. Turn us back to you. Sometimes that's all I can say to God. You know, sometimes that's my prayer. Is God, my heart is so wicked, it can do nothing to come your way. It can't. It tries, but it won't. You got to do it. You have to turn my heart. And sometimes that's my prayer. So it ends on such a sad part in verse 22, right? Unless you have utterly rejected us and are very angry with us. Now we know, we live in our day where we know, did God fully reject Israel? No. Where's Israel right now? They're in where? They're in Israel. Okay? So God has actually put them back into the land, right? In 1948, they actually, isn't that crazy? Just in 1948, they went back to the land and became Israel. And Jerusalem is there now today. Isn't that crazy? So God has established that place, and God has not utterly rejected him. I would always ask you guys, if you're in your Bible studies, to read chapters 9 through 11 of the book of Romans, just so you can see Paul's defending that God has not rejected Israel. But he has a special place for Israel in his word. Some people believe in what's called replacement theology. And Samantha, what that means is that Israel, the Bible is written by a bunch of Jews, right? The whole Old Testament is the history of Israel. That's the whole Old Testament. So what it's about. The New Testament is about the fulfillment of Israel becoming all that it could be in God. Some people reject that Israel has any place today, but that it has been replaced by the church. And that the church is now Israel. Whenever you read Israel, it's not meaning Israel, but it's meaning the church. And if you read Romans 9 through 11, you'll see that Paul says, No, Israel is Israel. Meaning God still has all the promises that he has for Israel are still for the nation of Israel. They're not for the church, but they're for Israel. The church is a separate entity. Different. Okay, so that's Lamentations. Pretty cool book, huh? What'd you guys think of that one? It's kind of cool. It's kind of okay. A little sad. That was a sad book, you know, but it's a Lamentation, right?